We are about to begin a press conference with Secretary of Defense, or as he likes to say, Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth.
Okay, anybody got any questions for me?
I got two questions, Mr. Hegseth.
Yeah, go ahead. What's your first question?
Have you quit drinking, sir?
Well, that is a stupid question.
Okay.
Really stupid. Of course I have. I don't even think about drinking. It's not on my mind. It's not in my vocabulary. We got a war to fight, okay?
Okay.
What's your second question?
Yes, sir. What is the name of that narrow channel of water between the Persian Gulf and the Gulf of Oman?
Well, that's a stupid question. It's the Strait of Hormuz.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program of dance music to bring you a special bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News.
It's time for Peculiar Podcast, hosted by Pat Cashman.
Gorgeous to look at.
And Lisa Foster.
She's dangerous.
Steve, you're on.
Ready or not, it's Pat and Lisa.
Can you dig it?
Yeah, I can dig it, yeah.
It's love and time.
Lisa, I would like to begin by reading something that my grandfather gave me. I carry this around with me all the time. Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
Are you being serious or are you being...
he gave me a watch many years ago. Uh-huh. He inscribed upon it words that I would like to share with our listeners and you right now.
All right.
I'm reading from the watch.
Okay.
This is beautiful. He says...
So this is engraved on the back of the watch?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
No man is an island, entire of himself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. In other words, hope is the pillar that holds up the world. Hope is the dream of the waking man. To put it another way, experience is not what happens to a man, it's what a man does with what happens to him. Or to look at it differently, every man is worth just so much as the things are worth about which he busies himself. And then it says, continued on the cuff links, which he never gave me, so.
That's very impressive.
Yeah, I carry it around with me. Well, it's finally time to do another podcast. I think our last, I'll tell you how long ago our last podcast, I'll get this out.
Okay.
Our last podcast was, I guess I can tell you about the people that have died since our last podcast.
Yeah.
Madame Curie, Sigmund Freud, Orville Wright,
wow.
Mark Twain passed away, Wyatt Earp, and President William McKinley was shot. That's how long it's been since we did our last podcast.
Yeah.
We apologize, everybody, for that.
It wasn't my fault.
It's wrong. It was entirely Lisa's fault, and we don't need to go any farther with that, except that now she's made herself... uncustomarily available, and we're going to do a new podcast.
Yeah, you all better right. Move it along, because I got things to do.
I know you do. Okay, let's move it along. We'll get this lugubrious part out of the way, as we usually do at the beginning. In no particular order, Robert Mueller passed away, 81 years old.
Yeah.
Led an investigation into a sitting president. They called him the special counsel. And Mueller wanted to ask two questions about Trump. One, did Russia attack the 2016 presidential election? And two, what's the deal with Trump's hair? Now, basically, Mueller concluded that he couldn't eventually accuse Trump of criminality, nor could he absolve him.
If we had had confidence that the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so. We did not, however, make a determination as to whether the president did commit a crime.
Of course, with no real decision, Trump decided he was completely absolved.
I think he is a total conflicted person. I think Mueller is a true never-Trumper.
But before that, Mueller led the FBI for 12 years, and this was just a week before 9/11. And the FBI was a catastrophe. Mm. He got it put back together again. In various ways. But before all of that, he joined the Marines in 1968. He got a Bronze Star because he personally led a fire team in the Vietnam War, and he got a Purple Heart, too, because he was shot in the thigh. The guy is American hero. And then I don't need to tell you what our wonderful president had to say about the passing of Robert Mueller.
Oh, he said the nicest things about this guy.
Robert Mueller was 81.
Fighting terrorism remains the FBI's top priority. And for those of us in the Bureau, our work is not merely finding and prosecuting those who would do us harm. It is making sure that other families will not suffer as you have.
Another guy that went south or north or whichever. Chuck
well,
Norris.
Careful there.
Chuck Norris.
In the eyes of a ranger, the unsuspecting stranger had better know the truth of wrong from right.
Yeah. 86 years old, action star of TV and movies. I know one of your favorite films, The Delta Force.
Oh, are you kidding me? I have that on Blu-ray. I have it on regular DVD. I have
really?
It on a video cassette. And then I have the soundtrack, too.
Wow. You really are a fan.
Boy, what are you doing up there? Drop that thing and get down here quick.
What do you want me to do? Jump?
I don't care what you do. Make it fast.
That's enough.
And I know you are. I know you love TV's Walker, Texas Ranger.
Oh, are you kidding?
Lyle Gans is one tough guy, cowboy.
Is that right? I'm tougher.
Oh, is that right? You're not supposed to do that.
And who are you?
I'm just a guy that's here to see that the damage is kept to a minimum. You see, what happens is when you do that, he gets very upset. And you're not going to like it when he gets upset.
No fooling.
Scout's on.
Well, my, my, my. I'm just dying of curiosity.
I tried. This.
If you know, if Chuck Norris had continued doing Walker, Texas Ranger, they were going to change the name of the show to Texas Ranger with a Walker.
Everybody was kung fu fighting.
Did I ever tell you that when I was in school, I was in junior high, I think, middle school, I decided, man, I gotta be able to protect myself. So I went into a
Wait,
store.
Can we stop right there for just a second? So you said.
Yeah.
I'm going to need to protect myself. Do I have that right?
Yeah. That's what my thinking was. Yeah.
What transpired to make you feel like you were in danger? What was happening? Was it your looks? Was it your...
It's all of that. Plus, I got pounded pretty good on a recess one time.
For what?
I don't know, but he had a ring on. And so I have ring prints on my face. And I decided, you know what? I got to be able to defend myself a little. But I said, I don't want to take a class in karate or kung fu or anything, because if I do that, people will hit me.
They'll challenge you and go, okay, big karate boy,
yeah,
let's see what you got. Okay,
well,
so
inviting. I would be trying to learn karate in this class.
Oh,
but I would have to get punched and kicked a lot in the learning of it. And I thought, I don't want to do that.
I'm not sure that's how they teach you, but okay.
So I went to
You stand right there. We're going to come punch and kick you. Okay, you clearly need some self-defense. You clearly need some self-defense skills. I don't think they test you first to see how bad you are.
It's sort of like the thing with the TV spots for pharmaceuticals. Do not use it if you're allergic to it. Well, how do I know?
Yeah.
Until you start punching me.
Yeah, that's true.
So I decided I want to learn karate, but I don't want to get hurt learning it. So I went into a bookstore and bought a book on karate. And I thought with pictures and descriptions, I could learn karate from a book and not actually have to do anything physical to learn it. Yeah. It didn't work, Lisa. It did not work.
Yeah, but you could have used the book to... you know, whack somebody with, at least that could have been.
Or given them a paper cut or something.
Yeah.
Everybody was kung fu fighting.
Yeah, from a book.
Those kids were fast as lightning.
and then a woman named Judy Pace, 83 years old, an actress, and really is regarded as one of the first black female antagonists in TV and movies.
Now, do you think you could finish telling me about your mother?
Well, mostly she likes to rub my neck.
Like this?
She was in a show called Peyton Place.
Then
she moved into so-called blaxploitation movies. Cotton Comes to Harlem.
You are really one ugly child.
I mean, it's really too bad. Because if you wasn't, we could spend the time, you know, doing the thing.
I'll put a sack over my head.
And then she played the wife of NFL player Gale Sayers in the movie Brian's Song.
Gale, it's just so good to have you home.
Yeah, it's good to be home.
With Billy Dee Williams.
Can I get you anything?
Nope. I'm fine.
Did you ever see that movie? Oh, God.
Everybody saw that movie.
That movie's just horrible.
What do you mean?
If you just want to bawl your eyes out for 12 days straight, go watch that movie.
I think James Caan played the part of Brian Piccolo.
Yes.
I love Brian Piccolo. That was what Gale Sayers' character said.
Man, what a tearjerker.
And then finally, well, there's two more. Roscoe Robinson. You ever hear of him?
No, but I like the name.
Yeah, me too. He died at the age of 97. But he was a singer, and he was a songwriter, heavily influenced by Sam Cooke. That was kind of his hero and his mentor, although Roscoe Robinson had some hits of his own, like this one, That's Enough.
I don't want security. I just want you to save your love for me, and that's enough.
That's enough, baby, that's enough.
That's enough.
And Do It Right Now.
The time you really want me, darling, I may not want you.
And if you listen to that Do It Right Now, you can hear shades of Sam Cooke's A Change Is Gonna Come.
I was born. In a little tent, oh, and just like the river I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.
There's a similarity there. But Roscoe wrote some songs, too. And here's the thing. He was in three different gospel groups called the Blind Boys. First one was called the Blind Boys of Mississippi, and then later the Blind Boys of Ohio, and then finally he sang on some of the Blind Boys of Alabama songs. And he himself was not blind. So it was kind of a cheat, but Roscoe Robinson has shuffled off. And finally,
the white ducks fly on past the sun.
Country Joe McDonald of Country Joe and the Fish, 84.
Give me an F. Give me a U. Give me a C. Give me a K. What's that spell?
Fudge.
What's that spell?
Fudge.
What's that spell?
Fudge.
Fudge.
Elmer Fudd!
Yeah! Well, come on, all of you big, strong men, Uncle Sam. Need you
okay,
help
I
man.
Did edit that a bit for kids and grandmas.
Way down yonder in Vietnam.
And this, of course, was the I'm Fixin' to Die rag.
And it's one, two, three, what are we fighting for?
And this is arguably the most famous song from Woodstock in 1969.
And it's five, six, open up the pearly gates.
And they have opened up the pearly gates for Country Joe McDonald. He was 84.
Two, three, what are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam.
And that concludes my list.
How are you doing? You, Lisa Foster,
who,
you.
Me?
Talking
me?
To you.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
I suppose I'm fine. Yeah.
Well, you've sure been making yourself scarce lately. I'm glad
now,
we could get
that
together
is not,
for this
that
podcast.
That is not true. No, that's not true.
Well, you can say it's not true, but it's evidenced by how long it's been since we've done a podcast. God knows I have begged you to come on. Just give me 45 minutes. We'll do a podcast. But no, you were busy, you know, baking cookies and out picking flowers and shoveling dog
picking.
Poop and all the things you do that are more important to you, apparently, than doing this podcast.
And it's okay for me.
You can mock me. You can put me down. You can ignore me all you want. But you're hurting other people, Lisa. People who might want to listen to this podcast. Granted, it's not a lot of people, but there are some. And because you're kind of dismissive of what that means to me and other people.
I admire you calling me out on it because you're right. I've been baking cookies and picking flowers and cleaning up dog poop. And that's not right.
Gee, now I feel bad. That's so big of you. I feel like...
No. It's my fault entirely. That is
music to my ears.
No, don't feel... It's my fault. It's totally my fault.
Hello from the other side.
You mean from the other side of town? How about never? Well, okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, come on. I'm always there. All right. Fine. Yeah, you didn't try that hard, okay? Yeah, sure. Well, you did. All right, Lisa, apology accepted.
I got a friend who, and I've seen him do this several times, and so I know it's not a coinkydink.
Uh-oh.
When we will go out for coffee together, he, you know, you get up and you order your coffee and then you go down the line and you get to the checker and they say, okay, what did you want? I'm getting a vanilla latte with sardines. Okay. that'll be $7.50 or something, whatever it is. And then, so he pays his money, but then he hesitates and he makes sure that the server is watching him when he puts his tip into the jar. If she's not looking at him, he'll hang around. He'll pretend like he's doing something else and fiddling around. And then when she's finally got eyes on him, then he produces the tip and in a demonstration puts it into the jar to make sure that she or he sees him doing it.
Does he do it with like a flourish too to sort of, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I guess it's a bit of a flourish. Yeah, but I've seen it over and over again. So this is his thing. And because he wants to take credit for being this benevolent person, I guess, or something like that.
Yeah, that's interesting. Do you have anywhere you're going with this, or can I?
No, but
share?
Isn't it just about the same as pretending to put a tip into a jar and then not really putting anything in there at all?
No, it's
a clear glass that there's money already in. You can see it because it's clear. And he makes a little fiddly noise or a little fiddly action to make it look like the tip that is in the jar has just come from him. I've seen him do that too.
Wait, he's not really putting a tip in the jar?
No, because he maybe didn't have tip money, so he's going to do that.
Okay, but that's odd.
Yeah, it is odd. It's somewhat.
Is he listening right now?
I don't know, but he's begging, because I'm sure other people do it. He's begging people to see how wonderful he is, how gracious he is, how giving he is. But he's not really doing it. He's not
being. Now, I'm going to throw a different take on this, because I don't know if he's trying to show how wonderful he is as much as he's trying not to have the shame of not tipping.
Yeah.
Because this is what I run into is the screen where they whip the screen around at you.
Yeah.
And in blinding giant letters, it's like 15, 25, or 80% tip.
Yeah.
And you can't shield it from the people behind you. And I feel enormous shame when I'm ordering a coffee and I'm like, I don't really feel like tipping you. I really don't. I'm sorry. You made a coffee. I don't know why I have to tip you, but the pressure to do that. So I will, out of shame, press the thing and give them a tip. And
then, you know, they're looking at it to see how generous you were.
Well, they're standing right there.
That's right.
So, I mean, and they can see it show up on their side of the register. And then everybody else in the back of the line can see, because the no tip button is way far away from the 15, 25, and 80% buttons.
That's right.
So they can tell if you're going down there.
Why did they put the thing no tip there? I mean, why don't you just say, you know, 15%, whatever it is. All the choices, but why no tip is just like a slap in the face.
To who, them or me?
For them. I'm going to go out of my way to make sure you get no tip. Nothing. What a jerk. I'm going to spit into his latte.
I have a girlfriend who says, don't be ashamed of the, you know, no, there's no tip. Just hit no tip. Don't be ashamed. But I just, the pressure. So maybe your friend is feeling the pressure of making sure he looks good. Not that he wants to be good. He just has shame if he's...
Yeah.
You know,
no,
I mean?
He wants to look good. Yeah, you're right.
Money for nothing and your chicks for free. Now that ain't working. That's the way you do it.
There is a secondhand store out near where I live that we go to frequently. We've gotten some furniture from there and other little devices. I think I bought my magic microphone device at this secondhand store, and I paid $5 for it, Lisa. But
I know,
boy,
Pat,
has it ever paid off?
I mean, it's wonderful. And I got it for $5 at this store.
I know.
This is like a science fiction movie. Who are you? What do you want?
Welcome, people of Earth. We will destroy you.
But why?
I don't know, just for the hell of it.
So I used this device. Anyway, so this place, this secondhand store, by the way, I bought a second one of these a couple of weeks ago, Lisa.
Why? Why? You do not even need this one. Why did you buy two?
Because I'm going to send the second one to you. So then you'll
why?
Be, you'll. It's like sharing ammunition with you. You'll be able to... send me back a rejoinder on whatever silliness I'm doing on this thing with your own device. Won't that be nice?
Oh my God. This, yeah. Your little
don't,
toy is
don't
gone.
Don't thank
a little
me now.
Too...
Don't thank me now. Okay. You'll thank me
okay,
later.
I won't.
So the secondhand store, you check out. Now, mind you, everything in the store has been donated. And we
yes.
have donated many things. Many things. Everybody does. It's all donated. It's all
right.
given away.
Right.
First of all, they have slowly been inching their prices up through
I
the last
know.
Few years.
I'm not going to the one near you, obviously, but I loved a good thrift store. And there's a couple that I'm like, what do you think? You're Nordstrom? What's going on here?
Yeah, we're observing that too. And then you buy the item, and then they say, and then they'll turn the thing around, and you can add a tip. Well, all the proceeds of this secondhand store go to a nature center near where we live. All the proceeds, they go there. And they send a lot of money. You know, over $500,000 a year go to this.
Oh, wow.
Center. Yeah. But then, on top of that, if you want a tip on top of that, it'll also go to the nature center. I think, wait a minute. You got all this crap you're selling for free, and now you want more money? Eh, not doing it. And you get the same guilt thing, though. Oh, no tip. Oh, okay. Well, thank you.
I know. Yeah. That's weird, though. I've never seen a tip at a thrift store.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? I just started doing that recently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My wife, do we have a tip jar?
Kind of, we do. I have to say, interrupt this for a moment. We have had remarkable generosity thrown our way recently. Next podcast, I would like to enumerate some of those names. Names we didn't even see before. So either this podcast is growing or people are using aliases. I don't know, but God love you. Thank you for that. It'll make it possible for us to continue to do this podcast every several months.
That's the real reason we haven't been on for a month. We just couldn't afford it.
So my wife had a feature on a local television show many years ago where she would come in maybe every couple of weeks on a it was on a morning television talk show called, what was it called? Good Company. Wonderful man named Cliff Lenz was the host. Mm-hmm. And they would have other hosts and hostesses. Well, she would come on as the bargain lady. And she would tell people about these wonderful bargains she had found. Like let's say you're going to get married, but you really can't afford a full-scale wedding dress. They have wedding dresses for sale. This was Goodwill in Seattle. Goodwill. Mm-hmm. I'll say the name. And so she'd come on and she would go to Goodwill and she would shop around and she'd find these wonderful items. And then she would bring them on the television show and say, look at this wedding dress. It's gorgeous, isn't it? And then the host would go, oh, well, that's beautiful. You know how much this is? $100. Isn't that great? And she'd bring other items on, you know, different kinds and what bargains they were. Not always from Goodwill, but that kind of store. Well, what happened is, as she was on the air for every week or so for a few weeks, all of a sudden she goes back into Goodwill and all the prices have been jacked up. People have been showing up based on her TV appearances and looking for bargains and said, hey, we ain't selling this stuff for enough money. Let's jack our prices up.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
There's some fine line between charity and opportunism, I guess, for another word.
Yeah.
But it was remarkable to see that maybe that same wedding dress all of a sudden now has gone to $500 from $100. Mm-hmm. So she had an impact. But maybe not the kind she was counting on.
Hey, Macklemore, can we go thrift shopping?
What?
I'm gonna pop some tags. Only got $20 in my pocket. I'm hunting, looking for a comma. This is freaking awesome.
That happens in, I don't know if you do any shopping or selling on Facebook Marketplace. I find
don't.
It's a good place to find, you know, things like garden pots, and because, you know, I like to pick flowers after I've picked up my dog poop. And so, you know, I go on Facebook Marketplace and I'll find some stuff or I'll sell some stuff I'm getting rid of. But I had a situation where.
Are you an arms dealer? Is that what's going on?
Yeah.
End of discussion. Continue with what you were saying.
So I was interested in, I don't know, let's call it a thing. And I messaged the person selling the thing. And I said, hey, I'm really interested in this thing. If it's still available, I'd like to come pick it up. And the price was, let's say, $25. And she doesn't respond to me. And I go back the next day to take a look at the item to see if it was still available. It was, but she jacked up the price to $50.
Oh, you dirty dog.
I'm like, what the F? Are you kidding me? And apparently, if you see there's a lot of interest in something, people will jack the price up and see who's left.
Yeah.
And it's like,
that's
all right, I'm out. I'm not playing that stupid game. I'm gone. Bye-bye. I don't need your dumb thing.
Things like a lover's vow. Things that we don't do now. Thinking about the things we used to do.
Infuriating, Pat. I tell you, it's infuriating.
Well, it is infuriating. I mean, if you've ever spent any time online, like trying to book a hotel room, for example, between the rate you see and the rate that you'll finally establish is
it's about $1,000 different.
Airline travel, you know, same thing. Yeah, they advertise this. Oh my God, that's great! I can go all the way to Birmingham on that for $100. I'm gonna, and then of course when you try to book it, it's guess what? It's like three times that. Yeah. Whatever. I have a friend right now that is planning a trip to New Orleans next week, and he's trying to cancel it, but he can't. He got a bargain rate on the air flight, but because of what's going on as we record this at airports with TSA, there's these long lines, and he said, I don't want to do that, so maybe I'll cancel my trip guess what? You got it at a bargain rate. You can't cancel it. You're stuck.
Is there anything else we old people can bitch about on this podcast? Anything else you want to bitch about?
Well, here's the thing. I was in the store the other day, the grocery store, and I was looking around the snack food aisle.
Ooh, you're in the snack aisle.
Oh, I'm into health foods. And I saw this. This is on the package. It says Lay's potato chips. And then made with real potatoes. What the hell else were potato chips made out of? What are they suggesting here? That they're made of pieces of human skin? I mean, to ballyhoo that they're made with real potatoes. Oh, they're not made with fake potatoes.
Right. Yes. Some potato chips, I think, are made with fake potatoes. Like,
what is a fake potato?
Well, like Pringles isn't, like, I think it's like made out of mashed potato with a bunch of other stuff, and then it's sort
you think that is what it's made out of?
I'm making up stuff, but well, it doesn't. I eat a Pringles, it doesn't seem like a real potato is involved. I'm just saying.
Seems the Tuesday Bridge Club is simply amazed by Pringles' newfangled potato chips.
Now you girls really have something to talk about.
Are there really potato chips in there?
I don't believe this.
They're made a new way.
Beautiful!
Oh, look at all those chips.
They are broken.
Oh, where do you taste them?
Delicious.
Fresh.
Pringles' newfangled potato chips.
Milk made out of real liquid that comes from cows.
See?
I have no resolution to that point. I just want something that I have observed.
Yeah. It does make you wonder.
It does. And I'm filled with wonder. Hey, I have a friend, and you've met him too. His name is Richard. He is, by the broadest definition, autistic. Mm-hmm. And he's one of the most remarkable people I've ever met. He is a musician, plays piano, he plays the trumpet, he writes music, writes his own songs. He's got an album coming out of Beatles covers that he's just recorded, but usually he writes his own music. He's amazing. And he's got a facility for, you remember the movie Rain Man? That is sort of what Richard is like. Mm-hmm. And you can ask him the most obscure things. Like I will say to him, Richard, when did you and I first meet? When was our first meeting? And he will say without hesitancy, that was May 1993. In front of the old Bon Marché, you were wearing a blue tie and a ball cap with the Mariners logo on it. I mean, that's his mind. He can remember all of these encounters. He tells me we have met over 550 times. And if you ask him what was time number 61, he can tell you the date and the occasion, circumstance, and all of that, and what I was wearing, what he was wearing. He's an amazing amazing person. He really is. His musical ability is self-taught. Nobody ever told him he could. He's just got an ear for music. He can do it.
Do you remember the actress Mary Lou Henner on Taxi?
Yes.
Yeah, she's got the same ability.
Yeah, she's got a photographic memory, as she says, and she can remember. She remembers everything that happened to her.
Yeah, she remembers the date, the time, what everybody was wearing. She's got that same thing going on. It's kind of crazy.
It's crazy. So years ago, somebody decided, hey, Richard really is a remarkable guy. We need to do a movie about Richard. Well, it turns out that two different parties both had the same idea, and they were independently and separately from each other producing a movie about Richard. And at some point, these two parties decided, look, let's collaborate and we'll share the footage we've shot and we'll make a movie together. And that's what happened. And so the movie is available on YouTube. So they make this movie about Richard. It's well received. One of Richard's friends is Jeff Bridges, the actor. And Jeff decides that he's going to get Richard's film into the Santa Barbara Film Festival or something like that. This film was presented in different film screenings around the country. At the Santa Barbara one, after the movie is shown at the theater, Jeff Bridges decides to bring a whole bunch of people, including Richard, over to Jeff Bridges' house to celebrate post-movie.
And so it's called It's called Big City Dick, Richard Peterson's first movie.
That's it. Big City Dick. That was the name he put on himself when he moved from his town of Chehalis, Washington, to Seattle. His mother decided, you know what, I'm not going to be around forever. Richard's got to learn how to take care of himself and make sure nobody takes advantage of him. So he moves to Seattle and started calling himself Big City Dick. And it's pretty cute. But this party that happens at the end of the screening of the film includes a lot of celebrities. There are all kinds of people milling around. Richard's sitting at Jeff Bridges' piano. And at one point, this will show you how Richard's mind is. If he doesn't know who you are, you don't count. He counts people in his head. Somehow he landed on me, Jeff Bridges, a singer named Johnny Mathis.
Chances are awfully good.
If you are a radio disc jockey, you're probably on Richard's list of people that he has met or wants to know. But if you're not on the list or he hasn't heard of you, forget about it. So Jeff Bridges, during this party, says, "Hey, Richard, come here for a second. I want to introduce you to somebody." And Richard comes over and he says, "This is Sir Anthony Hopkins, Richard, the actor, Sir Anthony Hopkins." Hopkins goes, "Hello, dear boy. It's a pleasure to meet you. Your film was wonderful." And Richard says, "What is your name?" "Anthony Hopkins." "You were in Psycho."
"Oh, no."
Hopkins says, "Oh, no, you dear boy. You're thinking of Anthony Perkins. Different actor. I'm Anthony Hopkins." And Richard says, "I never heard of you." And walks away.
Oh, my God.
That's all, folks.
If he'd never heard of you, it didn't matter. You could be the Pope. Never heard of you. And he'll walk away. I love Richard about that. He's just frank. He's who he is, incapable of deceit. He's only capable of telling the truth. And it's fantastic. Richard. See the movie, Big City Dick. It'll explain everything about him.
Open the door, Richard. Open the door and let me in. Open the door, Richard. Richard, why don't you open that door?
Richard, why don't you open that door? Open the door, Richard!
There is a, on the IMDb page for this, there's the list of the cast. Top cast, Peter Barnes, Jeff Bridges, Pat Cashman, whoever he is, Gary Crow, Johnny Mathis, John Maynard, Matt Reedy, Ken Schramm, Steve Wilson, Ross Schaefer. The picture next to your name is not you, so I don't know who that man is.
Oh,
but I'm going to send you a screenshot of whose picture they put.
When people would say things about the radio show you and I used to do on a couple of three different stations, the nicest compliments I would ever get are from people that said, "Well, I used to drive my kids to school, and we had your radio show on in the car. And I felt comfortable with that because I knew that you guys wouldn't say anything on the air that I would have to explain to my kids." In other words, you didn't use profanity. You weren't doing anything on your show that needed that I needed to turn off in front of my kids. And so what we would do, Lisa, we could talk about things, but I would always talk about them in an oblique manner or double entendre or triple entendre. And I felt like you can talk about anything you want. You just don't need to be profane about it or overly graphic. And that was sort of fun. And you have to think a little harder to do that when just blurting out profanity is easier. I feel the same way about stand-up comics. I like guys that can be a little more clever in their presentation than just over the top gross.
Right.
So that's what we did. But then I would occasionally love these old songs that also had, they came near profanity, but then they would change gear.
Yeah.
Here's an example of one of those songs.
"I have a sad story to tell you. It may hurt your feelings a bit, Last night when I walked into my bathroom, I stepped in a big pile of shaving cream. Be nice and clean, shave every day, and you'll always look keen.
It's only tawdry if you want it to be.
Right.
I think I'll break off with my girlfriend. Her antics are queer, I'll admit. Each time I say, darling, I love you, she tells me that I'm full of shaving cream. Be nice and clean, shave every day, and you'll always look keen.
I'll play another song example at the end of the podcast.
If any of you feel offended, stick your head in a barrel of shaving cream. Be nice and clean, shave every day, and you'll always look keen.
Hey, I was talking to my son the other day, and I was reminding him about something that he did with his friends years ago, and I probably brought this up before on one of the previous podcasts. We've done, how many of these have we done? Are we approaching 400 podcasts?
350 today, sir.
350. Oh, it's a big day.
350.
Come on, let's hear it. That's for a celebration right there.
Yeah. Give it up.
You better put bug spray on our shopping list.
So I asked him, I said, do you remember the time that we had a dog? You were a little kid. This is my son, Chris. He must have been no more than 8 or 9 or 10. And we had a little dog. It was a dachshund named Frankie, like Frankfurter. Sweet little dog, cute little thing. And Chris and his friends all loved this dog. One day, somehow, Frankie gets out of our yard, goes over to the neighbor's house where they had this big mean dog tied up like to a pole, like a maypole on a chain. We don't know exactly what happened, but Frankie got entangled in the big dog's chain and the dog, you know, ran around and around the pole and Frankie got squeezed, let's just say, and he was deceased. Horrible day in our family. Everybody was just so upset. And we couldn't really blame the neighbor because our dog had wandered over to their yard. It was a really sad day. And Frankie was a little dog. So I found an oversized shoebox, and we put Frankie in that. And then I told Chris, if you and your friends want to go and give Frankie his final resting place, you could do that. So it was really cute, Lisa. I wish I'd taken pictures because these kids, there's probably 5 of them. They're all walking with the shoebox and a shovel, and they go out into a wooded area near our house.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come back later, and I said, did you find a nice place for Frankie? Chris said, yeah, it's under a big old cedar tree out there. And I said, well, that's nice. That's nice. And that was that. So then, 5 days later, maybe a week, I'm in the kitchen, and I look out the window, and here's Chris again, with a shovel again, and his friends in tow, and they're heading back out into the woods. And I say, Chris, come here, what are you doing?
Oh, hi, Dad.
Where are you going?
Well, we just wanted to go back out into the woods and dig Frankie up to see what he looks like by now.
What did he say when you reminded him of it? Does he even remember that story?
He did remember it. That's
so funny.
Yeah. That's a kid for you, especially a boy, I think.
Yeah.
You can't be mad at their curiosity about something.
Right.
My wife, Patty, went to nursing. You know, she's a nurse. That was her profession.
She's nursed me back to health a couple of times.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Well, she... By the way, she's had a lot of restaurant jobs, so we were talking about tips earlier, and you don't get tips as a nurse. But I said, so what are some of the things you had to do in nursing school? And listen to this, Lisa. One of her jobs, she had to clean glass eyes.
clean them? What was on them?
Well, it might be little smudges on them or something. So, you know, they didn't look as good, or they could be pieces of cream pie or whatever. So they have to be cleaned like you would clean a diamond ring or something every so often.
Oh, yikes.
So you have to pop them out with this handheld suction thing.
And it makes that noise when you do it.
And then when you put them back in, your orbital nerve is what moves this glass eye around.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I'm starting to feel queasy now. I thought you meant there was like a big old box of them in the storage room she had to go clean. I didn't realize she was actually...
No, she had to pop it out herself.
Cleaning people's eyes that were in use. Why can't they clean their own frickin' eye?
Yeah, or why can't you just drop it off? Here's my eye. I'll be back up tomorrow.
Or can't you just rinse it out? Why do you need to even take it out?
I don't know. But the glass eyes, I think, especially if you've never had one, are a source of some fascination. They never seem to quite work right. I remember the actor Peter Falk had one. Sandy Duncan, another actress, had one. And it didn't track along with the other eye perfectly. So you could kind of tell.
Sammy Davis Jr.
Sammy Davis Jr., another example. Yeah. Yeah. It reminded me of this W.C. Fields bit.
Tell me, Sheriff, how did you ever get the name of Honest John?
The time of which I speak, I'm tending bar up at Medicine Hat. Well, a guy used to come in there with a glass eye. I used to wait on him. Wasn't a bad, huh? He used to take this glass eye out, put it in a tumbler of water. Comes in one day, and he forgets the glass eye.
But tell me, how did they come to call you Honest John?
I was saying, one day he forgot his glass eye. I found it. The next morning when he came in, I says, young man, here's your glass eye. And I gave it back to him. Ever since that day, I've been known as Honest John.
Honesty is hardly ever heard, and mostly what I need from you.
Okay, so I think, unless I'm mistaken, Lisa, I think we are about to bring this cow into the barn. Any last thing you want to add?
You are not mistaken, sir. Did you prepare a joke?
I did. Okay. And I would like to present it to you right now.
Okay.
When old Mr. O'Leary died, an elaborate wake was planned. Getting ready for that, Mrs. O'Leary called the undertaker aside for a private little talk, and Mrs. O'Leary said to the undertaker,
"Now you be pleased to be sure to secure his toupee to his head very securely. No one but I knew that he was actually bald, and he would never rest in peace if anyone found out at this point. But our friends from the old country, they're going to come and they're going to hold his hands and they're going to touch his head, you know, before they're through paying their last respects. That's just how they are."
Okay.
And the undertaker said, Your Irish accent is not a very good one, Mrs. O'Leary.
That was rude of him.
Yeah. Say, well, why don't you kiss me ass? And say, no, ma'am, this is off the point. Look, rest assured, Mrs. O'Leary, said the undertaker, mm-hmm. I will fix it so that toupee will never come off. Well, sure enough, Lisa, the day of the wake, all the old-timers were giving O'Leary's ancient corpse quite a going over. But the toupee stayed firmly in place. Well, at the end of the day, a delighted Mrs. O'Leary offered the undertaker an extra $100 for handling that matter so professionally. And wow. The undertaker said, No, I couldn't accept your money. I mean, after all, what's a few nails?
Oh, gee. That's actually very smart.
Well, I went for a drive in my pickup truck. I picked up my girl cause I wanted to show her my gloves cause she had on her mitts, and I blushed brightly when she showed me her perfume that she buys whenever Avon calls. So I took off my pants and I showed her my polka dot undies. My polka dot undies. just like your polka dot undies. Polka dot undies. The moral of the story, like a jewel, it is gleaming, but you'll never find it in a glass of warm milk or tea, 'cause it will not fit. And you probably already think I am full of fake innuendos and double-meaning rhymes, but I'll tell you that obscenity is all in your polka-dot undies. Your polka-dot undies. Yeah, your edible undies. Your polka-dot undies.
Thanks for listening to Peculiar Podcast.
Hey, goodbyes.
Join Pat and Lisa online at peculiarpodcast.com.
The gift that keeps on giving the whole year.
And on the Peculiar Podcast Facebook fan page.
Sweet.
On Twitter at Peculiar Podcast, at Mr. Pat Cashman, and at Foster Chick.
Join us and live in peace, or pursue your present course and face obliteration.